We're holding on Lamed Amud Beis, the last line. We started learning yesterday. We were talking about dinim of writing a Sefer Torah. We talked about what happens if a person left out a word, what it can do as far as putting it in. And we mentioned an opinion of Reb Shimon Sezuri that says that if you left out Hashem's name, you can put the whole thing above the line, between it and the line above it, but you can't do that to only part of Hashem's name. So the Gemara had gone on to say that the Gemara had quoted Ravin Bar Chinina in the name of Ula in the name of Rav Chanina, that not only is the halacha like Rav Shimon Chazuri in that, but every place in Mishnayos, every place where Rav Shimon Chazuri taught something, we'll see later in the Gemara whether if it was only to Mishnayos or also Brises, then the halacha is like him. And we started going through which was the original din that Ravin Bar Chinina was talking about when he said that statement. We went through a few possibilities, but we said it doesn't really work out with the Lashon. You asked, by the way, yesterday, so why does Reb Shimon Chazuri have this privilege that the halacha should always be like him? First of all, we do have such a concept. We have something called Vashem Imo Shalacha Kamosu B'chol Mokom. We find that David HaMelech, for example, he was given special siyata d'shmaya from Hashem that every time he should be able to come up with a conclusion that is correct according to halacha. So it could be just that Reb Shimon Chazuri had that. With that said, though, most of the poskim do not, in fact, poskim like Reb Shimon Chazuri in all the various places that we talked about. They passed him like him when it comes to two things that we learned yesterday about a case of a person who's dangerously ill and says to write a get for his wife, or even if he doesn't say deliver the get, they can still deliver it anyway. And the case of Trumas Meiser Shal Dmai, where you bought Dmai from Nama Oretz, you took Trumas Meiser from it, then the Trumas Meiser got mixed back in, and we don't know, was this really Trumas Meiser? Did he have to take it in the first place, or did the Nama Oretz take Meiser from these payers? So Reb Shimon Chazuri had said that you can ask the Nama Oretz and follow what he says. So in those two things, they passed him like him, as far as the matter of, but in many of the other things that we're talking in the Sugya, in fact, they don't. So Ravin Bar Chinina may say that the halacha is like him in every place. Doesn't mean that the poskim accept that as the last word in halacha. When it comes to the matter of suspending Hashem's name between the lines, so Shulchan Aruch does bring what Reb Shimon Chazuri says, that you can only put the entire name of Hashem between the lines, but not part of it. However, the Shach points out that there are Rishonim who learn not like that and say that they'd say, L'chatchila, you should do it that way, but B'dievet, if you put some letters of Hashem's name above the line, then B'dievet it would be kosher, which means that those Rishonim are not fully accepting Reb Shimon Chazuri's opinion in that regard either. Anyway, the point was that the Gemara was trying to figure out what was the original case where Ravin Bar Chinina had said, in a certain case, the halacha is like Reb Shimon Chazuri, and you should know the halacha is like him everywhere he says. So we went through a few possible cases, and we said it can't be, because in each of those other cases, we have other Amoraim saying the halacha is like Reb Shimon Chazuri, and then it should have just said that Ravin Bar Chinina said the same thing, rather than presenting it as a completely independent statement. So Ella Amar Papa said, Papa says Ashida, the original din that Ravin Bar Chinina was talking about, where Reb Shimon Chazuri had an opinion, is regarding a matter of Ashida, which we'll talk about in a second. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Ayayin, and Rav Nachman Yitzchok says it was a matter involving wine. So what do we mean by that? Rav Papa Amar Ashida, Ditznan. We learn like this. There's a din that we talked about a few days ago about wooden kelim being the kabel truma, and we talked about only if the kelim is made to be carried around with contents in it or on it. For example, we talked the other day about the shulchan, where the Gemara had thought the shulchan is never moved, and therefore why is it a kabel truma? And the answer is it is because they lifted it up for the early regal. There's also a rule in that connection that any wooden kelim that is large enough that it contains it would contain 40 saw of liquids or 60 saw of dry, because when you have dry things, you can heap them up on top of it, then such things are not considered kalim and they're not makabel truma. Basically, the idea is, like we learned the other day, wooden kalim are compared to a sack when there to be makabel truma, and a sack is carried both empty and full. Such large kalim are not usually transported around full. So such a keli, so a shiga. So, uh, um, So Rashi over here doesn't define what a shidah is. Tosfos points out that there's a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos that talks about this point as well. And Rashi over there explains that a shidah is a carriage that people ride in particular, that women ride in. I guess the idea is in those days men would usually walk on foot. If there's anybody who was going to be transported in a conveyance, it would be woman. Anyway, Tosfos has some problems with that. In that case, then it should be Mekabel Truma no matter what the size, because the fact is that people sit in it. So Tosfos gets into a bit of a discussion about that. Tosfos, maybe after all it is a carriage, but it's meant to place kalim inside, like luggage and whatever, and therefore it's not really considered, and that it's not really made for midras. And maybe because it's only meant to, it's used for transportation from point A to point B, so therefore there are reasons why to say that it's not Mekabel Truma either. So Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of that. So one of Tosfos' points is that maybe a shidah is a carriage, but it's mainly the kind that's meant more for transporting goods and cargo rather than people, and therefore it's not Mekabel Truma Midras. And then again, they say that even if it is meant for people to ride in, it's only maybe just to go from point A to point B. Another explanation, some Rishonim learn that a shidah means something like a cabinet or a closet, and in that case, then the whole question kind of falls away anyway, because you don't sit in such a thing. If following Rashi and Tosfos that we are talking about a carriage, then the interesting question is brought up. How does that apply to cars, for example, where a car being a Mekabel Truma? One big difference is, of course, that here we're talking about something made out of wood, and wooden kalim, there are certain rules about them being Mekabel Truma, whereas cars nowadays are often made out of metal, or at least have a lot of metal components, the frame, and metal is Mekabel Truma almost no matter what. Then you'd have the question, a lot of car bodies nowadays are made of plastic. Would that change the genus as well? So there's a lot of interesting discussion whether a car would be Mekabel Truma. Nowadays it's not really relevant because we're not able to keep the genus of Truma Vatara, but when Mashiach comes and we do again, we'll have to know whether that's the case. In any case, Hashiva. This shama, now, so the question is like this, again, if it's 40 saw of liquid in size or 60 saw of dry measure, which basically means, in other words, if it's three cubic amas, a mikra is 1 by 1 by 3 amas minimum, and it holds 40 saw of water. So our shida over here, however we define shida, in order to not be Mekabel Truma, would have to be at least 3 cubic amas in size. So how do we measure it? Beshama says we have to look at the capacity of it. We have to look at the inside measurement of it. And if it's that large, then it's not Mekabel Truma, but if it's smaller, it is. Beshilo says you measure from the outside, meaning, in other words, they count the thickness of the walls instead towards the volume of the cave. They count the thickness of the walls as well when considering the volume of the cave. And the Mishnah continues, Umoidim Elu Ve'elu, now Beshama and Basil do both agree, She'ein Uvi Aragvayim, that thickness of the legs of this Shida, where Rashi described the legs may well be wider than the sides. In other words, you have the thickness of the walls, the legs may be wider than that. So the thickness of those legs, the Uvi Aragvizvizin, and the thickness of any frame around it, if you have a frame around the opening of the shidah, that doesn't count because those are just decorative, not really decorative. I mean, the legs are functional, but they're not really part of the keli in and of. They're not really part of the carrying capacity of the keli, and therefore even Basilo agrees that those are not counted towards the 40 saw towards the 40 saw volume. Rabbi Yossi says no. Modim sha'ovi agrayim va'ovi ala vizvizim nimdal. On the contrary, both Beshama and Basilo, says Rabbi Yossi, would agree that the thickness of the legs and the thickness of the frames is counted towards the 40 saw. All it is the space between the legs, says Rabbi Yossi, says would not be counted towards it. In other words, so you have the picture, for example, let's say taking the possibility, let's say that a shida is like a large closet or cabinet, so it has legs. Now you have the legs, you have the legs themselves have a volume, but then you have the space between them, between the floor of the closet and the floor that the legs are sitting on. You're not going to say that whole area is considered as though it was filled up and therefore counts towards the volume. Rabbi Yossi says that definitely doesn't count towards the volume. Rabbi Shimon Chazuri says it's not so simple. Sometimes that space will count. If the legs were tefach tall, then yes, I agree that those parts are not, that the space between them is not counted. Because once you have a tefach of space there, then it's considered a chosh of a thing, and therefore, it has an independent existence of its own, and you can't count that space under that shita, that's a tefach off the ground, you can't consider it part of the volume of the shita. But if not, then it's not considered a mokum kosher. Benehem nimdad, then Rav Shimon Chazuri says the space between the legs would in fact be counted. We would consider that as though the walls of the shida go all the way down to the floor over there. And therefore we count it towards the 40 saw volume. So Rav Papa is saying that was the original case where Rav and Bachinina had said in the name of Ullah, in the name of Rav Chanina, that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Chazuri there and in every other place where he says something, where he says something. We said Rav Nachman Leitzchok Amar Ayayin. Rav Nachman Leitzchok says rather that the case that Rav and Bachinina was talking about was a case involving wine. Namely, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah. Now we have like this. Foods and drinks we know are able to be makabel tumah, and usually we talk about there are degrees of tumah. You have ava tumah, you can have avia voisa tumah, but that's not really relevant over here. You have ava tumah, which is able to be metamed people and kaven, and then you have the various degrees of vlada tumah, rishon, sheni, and when it comes to tumah, also shlishi, and when it comes to kodshim, also revi. So ordinarily, in other words, the rule would be, you have an ava tumah, let's say, touches a food, then that food becomes a rishon. That food touches another food, it becomes a sheni, etc. But there's a din d'rabbanan though that liquids are always considered a rishon l'tumah. The idea behind it is like this: with foods, in order to be makabel tumah, we know they have to get wet with one of the shiva mashkin, with one of the seven liquids with one of the seven things that are considered liquid in halacha. On the other hand, liquids themselves, the various liquids that we're going to discuss over here, they themselves are already susceptible to trauma. Let's say, for example, water doesn't have to be wetted with water in order to be makabel trauma. Wine doesn't have to be wetted with wine or with any of the shiva mashkins to be makabel trauma. Therefore, the Chachamim made a rule that liquids are always considered a rishon l'tumah. We consider them as though an ava tumah touched them. Because the fact would be, let's say, for example, a dead sheretz or any other source of tumah touched these liquids, they would in fact be a rishon l'tumah. So therefore, the Chachamim imposed the rule that even, let's say, they were touched by a rishon or by a sheni or what have you, the rule is always going to be that liquids are considered a rishon. In addition, sometimes we have on top of that also a din that sometimes these liquids are even able to be metamic kalim and people based on certain considerations, which okay, that's not so relevant to our din over here. The point is that we're talking about which liquids of the shiva mashkin are subject to this rule that are always considered a rishon. So Mishnah says, Rameyu says that oil is always considered a rishon, meaning no matter what degree of tumah it touched. So oil being one of the shiva mashkin, then Rav Meir says it's subject to this rule and is always a rishon the tumah. The Chum say also honey has the same din. Rav Shimon Chazuri oima afa yain, and Rav Shimon Chazuri says also wine. So the Gemara says here, the fact that Rav Shimon Chazuri mentions wine, does that imply that the other Tanoim disagree? Mikval the Tanakama Sava Yayin Loi. Does that mean that the earlier Tanoim, the Rav Meir and the Chachamim, do not hold that wine is considered a liquid for this purpose to be always considered a Rishon L'Trumah? Why not? Wine is not only one of the Shiva Mashkin, but Rabbeinu Gershom points out over here, it's like a main Mashka. It's like among the Shiva Mashkin, it's like the primary one. So why would anybody hold wine would not be subject to this Zer? Ela Ema, so rather, we have to, so Gemara says Ema, you have to correct the wording of Shimon Chazuri Oma Yayin, that Shimon Chazuri says wine. In other words, Shimon Chazuri says, out of all the liquids, the Chachamim, out of all the liquids that we're talking about over here, the Chachamim impose this rule of being always a Rishon L'Truma only on wine, but not on oil and not on honey. So by them, the usual rule would apply that if they touch a Rishon, they become a Sheni. So now, then, according to that, then Rav Bachinina is telling us that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Shazuri there, and in every other place, he says. Tosfos points out, though, that here, so we're saying that over here, we're passing like Rav Shimon Shazuri in this particular din. Fine, again, maybe we're not passing him like him always, like we said before, but at least in this particular case, we're saying that this is one of the cases where the halacha is like him. However, Tosfos points out there's many other Gemaras all over Shas which take it as a given that oil is considered a mashke, is considered one of the Shiva mashkin. And if it is, why shouldn't this rule of always being a Rishon L'Truma apply to it? So Tosfos discusses that actually maybe what the Gemara means over here is when Reb Shimon Shazuri says wine, implying but not oil, what he means is oil and also honey, because we're talking about when the oil solidifies. Reb Shimon Shazuri would say, so Reb Meir would say that oil is always a Rishon L'Truma, meaning even if the oil congealed, nevertheless it still has the rule that if it touches something which is any degree of Truma, then it becomes a Rishon. And honey would be the same kind of thing, where the Chachamim would say, So the mayor would say that only would say that about oil. That oil, it doesn't matter whether right now it's liquefied or congealed, it's always considered a mashke. The Chum would say the same thing as far as honey. The mayor apparently would disagree. He would say that honey to begin with is too semi-solid to be considered a liquid for this purpose. Of course, it's one of the shiva mashkin, but the mayor presumably would say that it's too semi-solid always, as opposed to oil is normally liquid, and so if it happens right now to be solidified, then it would still have the same gene. Meanwhile, Reb Shimon Shazuri would say nothing of the sort. The only liquid that would always be considered, of these three, that would always be considered a liquid as far as the din of being a Rishon L'Truma would be wine, as opposed to, he would say that oil and honey, if they solidify, then they're not considered a mashke anymore. That's how Tosfos learns. In any case, so the point is that this is one of those cases where Reb Shimon Shazuri said a din, and again we have one version of Nachman Yitzchok is saying that was the original din which Rav Bachinina was talking about when he said the halacha is like Reb Shimon Shazuri. Okay, now that we went through various Mishnayos where we have an opinion of Reb Shimon Shazuri, let's talk about a Braisa. Tanya, we learned a Braisa. Omer Reb Shimon Shazuri, one time I got tevel mixed up with my chulin. So I had tevel, I had produce from which maaser had not been taken, and then I had chulin, regular food from which maaser had already been taken, and they're mixed up. Now what do I do? Now Rashi has two explanations over here. Rashi's first explanation is that when we say tevel over here, we don't mean full-fledged tevel. What we mean is dmai. So he had bought produce from Am Haaretz, and he still had to take maisers from it, following the rules of dmai. And now it got mixed in with chulin. Now the problem is he can't separate maisers and trumas maiser out of it, because it actually points out that the midaraisa, of course, is not chayev at all, because again, like we said before, roi v'am ha'aretz, master and hain, most am ha'aretz do take meister, and therefore we can assume that it was properly separated, and this is cholin as well. But midrabanan, we have to take from it, and we can't do that when it's mixed with cholin, because then you're going to end up taking from what's not required to have trumas and meisters taken. The rest of the cholin, you're going to be taking some on behalf of this tevel, on behalf of this dmai, and that's no good. So what does he do? Rashi brings a second explanation further down on the Amud. After Rashi goes through the explanation of the Gemara according to that, then Rashi says I have some questions about that. Based on the continuation of the Gemara, it doesn't seem to fit so well if we said that what he had is dmai. Rather, Rashi says his preferred explanation is at the tevel over here, and that explanation, actually, you find it in Rabbeinu Gershom's Pirush. Rabbeinu Gershom was the Rebbe of Rashi's Rebbeim, so the pastor, that was Rabbeinu Gershom's own explanation. I don't know if it was his own or learned from his Rebbeim, whatever, and he taught it to his Talmidim, and they in turn taught it to Rashi. However, Rashi has some questions on that, and he says, no, the tevel that we're talking about over here was 100% tevel. It was real full-fledged tevel from which Truma and Meister definitely had not been taken. Now, Midaraisa, though, it becomes mixed with chulin, then it would be bottle. So therefore, on a daraisa level, it would be potter. Midrabanan, though, we're going to say that tevel, even if a tiny bit of tevel gets mixed up with chulin, then it's not bottle. The reason the Gemara explains in the Masechta Avodah Zarah, Tosfos refers to it over here, is that Tosfos refers to it in a different sugya, that the reason is that with midaraisa, all you need is one grain of wheat to be, one grain of whatever produce it is, designated as truma, and with that you're pattering the whole thing. Only midrabanan do you need 1/40th or 1/50th or 1/60th. So by the same token, the Chacham made a rule that the tiniest amount of tevel is going to aser the chulin unless you do something about it. So now the question is, so again, according to the second explanation of Rashi, which Rashi prefers, is that it was actual tevel. However, on a daraisa level, it's not chayiv and truma and meiser, only midrabanan is it. So what does he do? So he says, "Vosi b'sha'alti yas Reb Tarfon." So I went and asked Reb Tarfon. V'omali, and Reb Tarfon tells me, "Leich kach l'chom in ashuk, go buy yourself some of this kind of produce from the market." Meaning, in other words, buy some dmai from an amoret, which is also potter daraisa. The aser olav, and then you'll be able to take from that dmai. You'll be able to take maaser on behalf of what got mixed into your produce. Now, why is that? How does that work? Kosova, because Reb Tarfon holds daraisa beruba bottle midaraisa. Like we just said, the tevel would have been bottle beroiv. It's only dirabanan that you say that it's not bottle at all. Beroiv amei oritz maaser in hain. And as we learned yesterday, most amei oritz do take maaser, and therefore, so the whole concept of having to take maaser from zmai is also dirabanan. So no problem. Bahavale katerim and a potter, ala potter. Therefore, it comes out in effect. When you're going to take from this new, when Reb Shimon Chazuri is going to take Meiser from this new produce that he just bought from the market, which is Dmai, but nevertheless, on a Daraisa level, is likely not Chayiv and Truma and Meiser, and he's going to do on behalf of what got mixed in with his produce, which is also not Chayiv Daraisa, then this way it'll work out. This way it's for Potter, and therefore it's fine. So it would work. So that detail would work. If we say that it was Demai that got mixed in, which is Rabbeinu Gershom's explanation and Rashi's first explanation. However, Rashi goes on to say that since the next thing in the Gemara, the next possibility the Gemara is going to say is to buy Peiros from a goy, then that wouldn't work so well because then. Now, the Gemara is going to go on to mention another possibility. Go buy from a goy, and his peiros are chayev and meiser. But then in that case, what if he bought from the amoret is in fact chayev and what about if the amoret fact is he might be from that significant minority that don't take truma, and then it is going to be chayev. If we take from what we bought from a goy, he's going to hold that what a goy grows in Eretz Yisrael is only chayav d'rabanan. But Rashi says if we're talking about that it was d'mai mixed in the first place, then it's going to be chayav d'oraisa. So therefore, Rashi prefers his explanation that we're talking about that what was mixed in to begin with was actual tevel. So that's what Reb Tarfon tells him to do, according to the first version over here in the Gemara. Buy from an Amoretz, buy more produce from an Amoretz. That will also be doubtfully chayiv and truma. So is what got mixed in the first place, either according to Rashi's first explanation, is also doubtfully chayiv and meiser, or according to the second version. According to Rashi's second explanation is definitely chayev, however it's bottled daraisa, and chayev only dirabanan, and that way you're doing from what's chayev dirabanan and what's chayev dirabanan, and therefore you're fine. So have a look, turn him in a potter on a potter, so therefore in effect he's taking truma from what's exempt on behalf of what's exempt. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Valei malei." Why does Reb Tarfon have to tell him, "Dafka to buy d'mai"? Why doesn't he tell him? Here's another alternative: "Leich kach mina ovid gechavim." Go buy produce that was grown by a goy in Eretz Yisrael, because peiros of a goy is also chayiv. Only the Gemara is assuming that a goy's peiros are also chayiv only d'rabanan. The answer is no, because Reb Tarfon holds ein kinyan lo ovid kachavim be'Eretz Yisrael lachia miyad ma'aser. When a goy buys land in Eretz Yisrael, Reb Tarfon holds that does not take away the chiyuv of ma'aser from that produce. It's still chayev in ma'aser. So therefore, when you buy from him, you will be chayiv in ma'isa. So the Taifan holds that way. Now it's going to come out, therefore, if you buy produce from a goy, Rabbi Taifan says, and the problem is you have produce which is definitely chayiv in Truma and Maisa. Meanwhile, you have this other produce, either is maybe chayiv, maybe not, because you bought it from an Amoritz, or it's bottled v'roiv, and therefore it's chayiv only d'rabbanon, and therefore this isn't going to work. Therefore, there's no possibility of buying from a goy. Necessarily, you have to buy d'mai. So here's where Rashi points out then that if you're buying from a goy, then you're saying to begin with it was demai that got mixed in. So what if the Amoritz in fact did not take ma'aser from this produce? Then on the contrary, then you have from what's potter you're taking on behalf of what's chayiv. So therefore, that's why Rashi says that we're talking about over here that what got mixed in to begin with was full fledged tevel. However, it was bottle moderaisa. So the point is that since your Taifan holds that a goy buying land in Eretz Yisrael doesn't pater from Truma and Maaser, then therefore that means that that produce is fully chayiv. So therefore that's how he has to tell him. Tosfos points out, by the way, the point, even if we're going to say that a goy's land is chayiv in Truma and Maaser, the fact is here we're not just talking about that the goy grew the produce. We're talking about that he also eventually did miruach. He went through the whole process of threshing and cleaning up and everything, the grain, and he made a pile of it and smoothed out the pile, which is considered the last stage of the processing of grain, and at that point becomes chayiv and ma'aser. And the din is, if a goy does that, then it's potter from ma'aser. So therefore, what are we talking about? So what do we care whether a Taifan holds that a goy's land in Eretz Yisrael is potter or not? Either way, even if a Taifan holds it's chayiv, once the goy does miruach, it's going to be potter anyway. So Tosfos says an interesting idea that nevertheless it resembles chiyuv. In other words, fine, it's not actually chayiv in Truma and Maaser because the goy is meruach, but nevertheless it's more similar to peiros that are actually chayiv and Maaser because Reb Taifan holds that at least the fact that it was grown in Eretz Yisrael makes it chayiv. So in other words, the point is, Tosfos says, after all, why didn't Reb Taifan tell him to go buy some produce that grew in a flower pot without a hole, which is also only chayav d'rabbanan, or buy produce from chutz la'aretz. So the idea is, in other words, this way, buying from a goy, yes, he did miruach, but it's closer to being chayav than it is the other kinds, which means, in other words, the Rabbi Akiva Eger in Gilui Nashas here refers to a comment from the Turei Even, from the Shagas Arya in Masechta Megillah, who explains that within d'rabbanans themselves, you have different degrees of d'rabbanans. So when you're trying to have something d'rabbanan, have it as close as possible to the thing that you're trying to, even though it's true, you could say they're all d'rabbanan and there's no difference, but nevertheless, you try to make them as similar as possible. And that's what Tosfos is saying over here. So the Gemara says, Ikadanji, another version of the discussion of what Reb Taifan told him to say, what we told him to do was, a second verse. So the first version is that Reb Taifan told him, go buy d'mai, which was grown and processed by a yid, and then that was grown and processed by a yid, and then it's chayav d'rabbanan because of the question of whether people take ma'aser from it or not. But then the Gemara had asked, why not buy from a goy? And the answer is it wouldn't work because the Taifan holds that the produce of a goy is in fact chayav. So in the second version, Ikadamri, another version is the other way around. The second version is just the opposite. Reb Taifan told him, go buy produce from a goy. According to that version, Kasavar, he holds Yeshkinyan, Lo'ev Kachavin Be'etisil Akiyah Mian Maisa. According to that version, he holds that a goy, Kasavar, he holds, when he said before, I think I read the wrong line, but he said before in the first version, go buy from a goy, Kasavar, in Kinyan, Lo'ev Kachavin Be'etisil Akiyah Mian Maisa, that a goy does not have a Kinyan in Eretz Yisrael, and his produce is nevertheless chayav. Now in the second version, he says, the Gemara is saying, Kasavar, according to the second version, Reb Taifan holds Yeshkinyan, Lo'ev Kachavin Be'etisil Akiyah Mian Maisa, a goy does have the ability when he buys land in Eretz Yisrael, but now it's not chayiv and ma'isa. The havalim and apotter, ala potter, therefore it comes out that you're separating, so now it comes out, so you're good. You're separating from what's potter on behalf of what's potter, according to the first version of Rashi, that according to Rashi's first explanation, the produce that got mixed in with d'mai, and it's chayiv only d'rabbanon. And the goyis is also only chayiv d'rabbanan because his land is not chayiv and ma'aser. According to Rashi's second and preferred explanation, the tevel was an actual tevel, but it's chayiv only d'rabbanan because d'oraisa would have been bottled. So according to this version, according to this version, why didn't Reb Tarfon and Torah Reb Shimon Chazuri buy from the market from Jewish sellers from Amei Aretz? And the answer is Kasabra, according to that way of looking at it, Reb Tarfon holds, according to this version, Reb Tarfon holds, Ein Roi V'Ama Oretz Ma'asrin, there isn't a majority of Amei Oretz who take Ma'aser. Therefore, we have real reason to be concerned that if you're buying produce from an Amei Oretz, it might not have been Ma'aser, and therefore, now you're going to be taking from what's Chayev on behalf of what's Potter, and therefore that wouldn't work. Whereas if you buy from a Goy, then it'll be covered. So two different versions of what Reb Tarfon told him to do. By the way, we learned yesterday that Reb Shimon Chazuri himself had given a case involving pulan mitzvi, when you have Egyptian beans, fava beans, whatever they are exactly, where we said that if you have some of it that's chayev, you have some of it from one year and some of it from a different year, then you can mix it all together and you can mix it all together and take ma'aser from it and take truma and ma'aser from it, and fine, proportionally it'll be the same as the mixer. Here we can't just do that because here most of it is not chayev in truma and ma'aser at all. You have some tevel, however we define tevel over here, demai or actual tevel, fell into chulin, and therefore that whole idea wouldn't work, and therefore the tarfon has to tell him that he has to buy some other produce and take ma'aser out of that. You have the two different versions of the Gemara, whether what he's telling him is produce from an Amei Aretz, or produce grown, according to the first version, produce grown by an Amei Aretz, and according to the second version, produce grown by a goy. Okay. So now that we went through that, and when we talked about this Braisa, now that we've analyzed this Braisa, in which Reb Shimon Chazuri has an opinion. So the Gemara says, Reb Yema Bashlemia sent the following message to the Papa. To ask, that we said before, we've been saying throughout the sugya, that Rovin Bachinina says in the name of Ula, in the name of Rav Chanina, that the halacha is like Reb Shimon Chazuri. V'loy oid, and not only that, and we talk about which was the original din in which he said it in connection with. And he continued, v'loy oid, not only that, ella kol makom sheshanu Reb Shimon Chazuri halacha kamishsei, that any place where Reb Shimon Chazuri teaches something that halacha is like him, does that rule apply? Afnis out of the tevel beholden, would it apply to this rule of tevel getting mixed in to cholin? Or maybe is it only? Maybe the rule applies only to things in Mishnayos. Amalei, Rav Papa says, Ain, yes, Rav Chanina, Rovin Machinina, in the name, going back to Rav Chanina, is passing like Rav Shimon Chazuri in this case as well. Rav Ashi says, Amalei Mazutra. So Mazutra pointed out to me, Koshi bar Rav Chanina Misura. Rav Chanina Misura had a problem. He couldn't understand that explanation. Why do we even need to ask the question? Pshita, of course the halacha is going to be, according to this opinion, the halacha is going to be like Reb Shimon Chazuri in this case as well. Mika Amar b'Mishnah Seinu. After all, does he say wherever Reb Shimon Chazuri says something in our Mishnah, which would imply only in Mishnayos? No. Kol Makom Sheshana Kamar, it says any place where he teaches. Well, in that case, when he teaches, teaches includes in a braisa as well, so therefore, in fact, it would mean that the halacha, according to this, the halacha would be like him in this braisa as well. So this ends the discussion about Reb Shimon Chazuri and his opinions. But the bottom line is, again, even though the Gemara has been saying all this time the halacha is like him everywhere, in practice the poskim don't paskim. They paskim like him in a number of cases, but not necessarily all of them, and in particular as far as what brought us into this discussion, the question about putting the name of Hashem suspended between the lines, whether you can put part of the name yes or part of the name not. So again, Shulchan Aruch does paskim like Reb Shimon Chazuri, but the Shach points out that there are Rishonim who say that b'di'evet it would be kosher if it was only part of it. Now, getting back to the dinim of Sifrei Torah, the Gemara says, Omer of Zeira, Omer of Hanano, Omer Rav, Kera haba b'shnei shittin. If you have suppose the parchment of the Sefer Torah tears, and the tear goes into two lines of the writing. Now, so the Nitpur, you would be allowed to sew up that tail. And then you can continue using the Sefer Torah. The Poskim do talk about, though, it does have to be that the tear doesn't actually break up a letter. Otherwise, you have a real problem. The letter itself is possible. So we have to be talking about that the tear went between letters or something. Misholish al Yitbur, but if it went through three lines, then already you can't sew it up. You would just have to put away that entire sheet of the Sefer Torah and put in a new one. The Rosh brings from Aram Rutenberg that the Rosh says he had asked his Rebbe, Aram Rutenberg, what about could you take a piece of parchment and glue it onto the outside of the Sefer Torah in that place and fix up the rip that way? And he said, Aram Rutenberg said no. For a couple of reasons. However, the Rosh himself disagrees and says you could, in fact, fix it that way. All we're saying over here is that where it can be sewn, then you're allowed to sew it. When not, then not. But even when you can't sew, you can put a patch on the back and be able to do it that way. So there's different discussions, different opinions among the Rishonim about that. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Omele Rabbi Zuti the Ravashi, Hochi Omer Rabbi Yimi Midifti Mishmei the Ravina. That Rabbi Yimi Midifti Mishmei the Rava. That Rabbi Yimi Midifti said the following din in this connection in the name of Rava. Choda Minan B'Sholish Al Yitper. When we're saying that you can't sew it up if it goes into three lines of the writing, Loyamon Elaba Tikta. That would only apply if the parchment of the Sefer Torah is old. So now, in other words, if it's old, then it doesn't really look nice when you have a rip in it. But if it's new parchment, less lamba, then it's not such a problem. So then you'd be able to sew it up, even if it goes into three lines. The Rivash explains that if it's more than three lines, you can't. But I think there are Rishonim who disagree on that as well. One point is, in other words, when it's old, so Rashi says that it's Maguna, it doesn't look good, that it's torn, the Rivash adds the point, in other words, the point is, when it's old and it's torn, it makes it look like the Sefer Torah, it makes it seem like the Sefer Torah is rotting away, and it's not the covered dicks of the Sefer Torah anymore, but if it's new, okay, it happens that things get ripped, then you'd be allowed to sew it up, even if it went into three lines. And the Gemara points out, v'loy atikta atikta mamish, v'loy chadtosa chadtosa mamish. Now actually then, when Rabbi Yumi Yamigifti is saying in the name of Rava, this distinction between new and old, it doesn't literally mean new and old, it doesn't literally mean how old the Sefer Torah is. Rather, the real distinction is, was the parchment of the Sefer Torah prepared using gall nuts? Gallnuts are you have on oak trees and certain other kinds of trees you have bumps that grow on them which can they're caused by an insect attacking the tree or something like that, so the tree produces something to defend itself. Anyway, these gallnuts contain a lot of a substance called tannin, which is used in tanning parchment. And it helps make the parchment stronger, and therefore, so the idea is, if the parchment was not treated with gallnuts, then Rashi points out, then it looks very white, it looks new. So therefore, so in that case, then we'd be saying you'd be allowed to sew up a rip that goes into three lines. So if you don't use gallnuts, then it looks white and clean, and then therefore it's considered new for this purpose. Hodafitzan, as opposed to, If the parchment was prepared using gallnuts, now it looks a little darker, and therefore it doesn't look as nice, and therefore if you have a rip in three lines, then that would be what we said, that you can't fix it anymore. Tosfos points out that from other Gemaras, it seems that gallnuts were part of the regular treatment of parchment, and if you don't use that, then you can't reuse the parchment at all for Sefer Torah. So Tosfos points out that actually you have other kinds of chemicals that they can use that accomplish the same thing as gallnuts. Somebody showing him also Rabbi Yohanneson explains actually that another way of looking at it is when it's prepared with gallnuts, then it's stronger parchment, and then therefore there's more reason to be able to repair it. But Amnon also explains that the opposite of Rashi, that when it's prepared with gallnuts, then you're allowed to fix it, and when it's not prepared with gallnuts, then you're not allowed to. In other words, the idea would be the gallnuts make it stronger or whiter or whatever it does exactly, and therefore it makes it look nicer, and therefore you could sew up even a rip that goes into three lines. Now, the Gemara adds, this that was saying that you can sew up a tear would only apply, for that you have to use gidin, you have to use the sinews of animals, the same kind of thread that you use for sewing the sheets of a Sefer Torah together in the first place. But to use other threads, specifically Rashi uses over here a French word to translate grodim, which means basically leftover threads that hang off a garment after you finished weaving it. So those kinds of things, loy, you cannot use it to sew those. So somebody showing him explained that it means you have to use gidin, you can't use any kind of thread. On the other hand, the Rosh, for example, writes that you could use silk thread, and he explains what the Gemara means is you can't use grodin, however you pronounce it, which means, in other words, like weak threads, you have to use something strong. Well, very well, silk thread is strong enough for the purpose. The Chazon Ish point, so the Gemara says, Boyer of Yehuda Ba'aba, Ben Daf L'Daf. Rabbi Yehuda Ba'aba asks, what about if the rip is between one column of the Sefer Torah and the next? So now, if it was in the area of the writing, it would go into three or more lines, but because it's in the margins, and therefore it's just going into empty space. Then shita la shita, or what if the rip is between one line and the next, and the space between one line and the next? My, what would be the din? Are you allowed to sew it up or not? And the Gemara says, teiku, we have to leave that unresolved, and we don't know whether we can fix it. The Chazon Ish points out an interesting point. Let's say we learned yesterday, for example, that a Sefer Torah has made up of sheets of parchment containing anywhere between 3 and 8 columns. So suppose, for example, you have a sheet that contains 6 or 7 columns, and suppose the rip happens to be between after the third column and before the fourth. No problem. Of course, you can sew it up. You'd be allowed to cut the whole sheet apart and sew it together over there in the regular way as the sheets of the Sefer Torah are sewn. So then, for sure, it's no problem. The question would be over here if it's after one or two columns on the sheet, would you be allowed to? And the Gemara is saying, "Taker, we can't resolve that." Some of the Rishonim learn that either actually not the Rishonim, the Taz talks about in Shulchan Aruch that even though we're saying you have these dinim when you're allowed to sew and when you're not allowed to, he says, but yeah, but if they went and sewed it or patched it like the Rosh says, then you could continue reading with that Sefer Torah. Again, as long as the rip didn't affect any of the letters. If it did, then you have bigger problems. Now let's start talking about the dinim of a mezuzah. We had gotten into all of this in the first place because the Mishnah had said that a mezuzah has two parashiyas and each one is ma'akev of the other, and even one detail of the letters is ma'akev. So we had digressed to talking about certain dinim with Sefer Torah. Now let's focus on mezuzah. From here until Daf Lamed Daled, we're going to be focusing on the dinim of mezuzahs. So the Gemara says, Amud of Zairi, and then this is also, it's also the same, it's also we just had at the top of the Amud, something that Rav Zairi had said in the name of Rav Hananel, in the name of Rab, and here we're also going to have something in the same, from the same chain. So Amud of Rav Zairi, Amud of Rav Hananel, Amud Rab, mezuzah shekosva shtayim shtayim ksheira. If a mezuzah is written with two words on each line, then it's kosher. Now, a Sefer Torah, we learned yesterday, has to have longer lines. You have to have each line has to be long enough to write the word L'mishpachei Seichem 3 times, which means, in other words, it has to be long enough to write 30 letters plus the spaces between them. But with a mezuzah, the Rishonim point out the difference is a Sefer Torah is meant to learn from in public, and back in those times to learn from as well. A mezuzah is put in a case and put on the door. You don't actually read it. It's there for the mitzvah. So therefore, if it's written in a way, if it's written in short lines, then there's no big deal. So the Gemara says, Iboyulahu. So now they have the question, Shtayim v'sholosh v'achas mahu. What would happen if instead of two words on each line, if you have one line, you have two words, the next line you have three words, then the next line you have one word, would that be okay as well? Mahu, what would be the din? Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, Koshkin, all the more so would be good. Shasah Keshira. Then he's writing it like the Shira Sayyam, where they have the Shira Sayyam, the Shira of Oz Yashir, is written in the Sefer Torah like that, with alternating long and short, with alternating longer and shorter lines. So therefore, mezuzah could very well be like that as well. But the Gemara says, what do you mean? You're saying that's good if it's written like a Shira? On the contrary, basically, they had a question. And Braisa says, Asar Kashira, if you write it, and they're assuming that it means a mezuzah, if you write it like a Shira, whether we like the Shira, with long and short lines, oh Shira Kamosa, or you wrote the Shira Sayyam in normal lines without the spaces that are supposed to be there, Psula, then it's possible. So it sounds like it's talking about a mezuzah. So in that case, then you can't. Then you can't write it like a Shira. So what are we saying? So the answer is Kitanya Hibasefer Torah. The answer is that Braisa is talking about a Sefer Torah, in a Sefer Torah, which again is meant for public learning and for learning from. There you have it. Can't be with the parts that are meant to be written like the Shira have to be written like the Shira, and the parts that not. And the Sefer Torah is possible otherwise. But with a mezuzah, there's no problem in the first place to write it like the Shira, because anyway, again, it's not really meant to be learned from. So the Gemara says, Itma Nami, in fact it was explained, it was said also Amar Abba Bachana Amar Yechanan, Va'amila Amar Abba Bachana Amar Yechanan. So in the first version it's Rabba Bachana, and the second it's Rabba Abba Bachana. Maybe he and Rabba were brothers. Anyway, Mezuzah Shasta Shtayim V'Shalosh Kachas, clearly stating if a Mezuzah was written in with a line of two words and a line of three words and a line of one word, Ksheira, then it's kosher. So it's kosher. We're also not worried about the fact that it means that you have spaces on the line similar to a parsha psukh or a stoma. We're not so worried about that. Now, provided though, what you can't do is you can't write a mezuzah like a tent. So Rashi gives a diagram over here. You'd have on the first line one word, on the second line two words, on the third line three words. You can't do that. And you also can't make it like a tail, which is the opposite. Three words, then two, then one. Such things are possible as a mezuzah. The Kananota explains the reason is because that's not a normal way of writing. The Torah has to tell us, after all, fine, you don't have to write a mezuzah like a Sefer Torah in that sense, but you have to write it at least in a way that would be considered writing. The Kananota points out this can't be considered normal writing, and therefore the din of chsav tam that you have to. The din of chsav tam that you have to write a perfect writing is not going to work, and therefore such shapes would be possible. But if you're doing random numbers of words on each line, and it's not one of those shapes, then it's fine. Now, the mezuzah has two parshiyos, and if you have shema and you have v'hoyim shemaya. So the last words you write in the mezuzah are, you write at the end of v'hoyim shemaya, ki me'a shemayim al ha'aretz. So how do you write that? The words al ha'aretz by themselves should be on the last line of the mezuzah. So where do we write it on the line? Some say you write it at the end of the line. So in other words, one version is that you write, the previous line ends, and then directly underneath the words, al ha'shamayim, directly underneath the words, you write al ha'aretz. The ikadami b'tchilas shita. Others say that you write them at the beginning of the line. So you have the previous line begin, the previous line goes, and then directly underneath that, you write Al Ha'aretz under the beginning of the previous line, which is how we do it nowadays. The idea of writing at the end of the line is an interesting point, because then it comes out that you have a space before it, which is in effect a parsha stuma, parsha psukh or stuma, and how does that work? And then they talk about it's not really such a problem, because again you do have to, again, the mezuzah is not really meant to be learned from, and therefore if you have, as the Gemara is going to explain, a symbolism of why you should write al ha'aretz at the end of the line, then we don't care so much if there's a space before it. So why the two different opinions? The first version that says that you should do it at the end of the line so that you have the words kimei hashamayim and directly underneath them is al ha'aretz. Behold, as the pasuk says, "Voya shemayim al aretz," as much as the heavens are above the earth. So therefore, in the mezuzah, it's very appropriate that you should have that the words al shemayim, kimei shemayim, should be directly above al aretz. The version that says that you write it at the beginning of the line, he holds the symbolism is the merachka shemayim v'aretz, as much as heaven is far away from earth. Meaning, like this, you have al shemayim, kimei shemayim is at the end of one line, and then al ha'aretz is at the beginning of the next line, as far away from it as it could possibly be, just like the heavens are far away from the earth. The Marshal brings an interesting idea on it about what does this signify. When it comes to a mezuzah, so Hashem tells us to put a mezuzah on our doors. What does a mezuzah accomplish for us? So number one, as we're going to learn in the next couple of blocks, that it protects a person. We know the famous story with Uncleus and the Roman soldiers, where he tells them that you guys stand as bodyguards over the emperor, whereas Hashem stands as our bodyguard, so to speak, in the mezuzah. So first of all, you have that protects a person and gives him long life. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere explained this is why women are chayav in mezuzah, because mezuzah brings long life, and women need long life just as much as men do. So that's one characteristic of a mezuzah. The other point is that the mezuzah helps keep a person away from aveiros. We're going to learn later on, the Gemara is going to explain that when a person is surrounded by mitzvahs, his tefillin, and a mezuzah, and tzitzis, and so forth, all of that helps protect him from aveiros. So now then, what is the, when we're writing al ha'aretz over here, what do we primarily want to hint at the arichos yomim that a person gets for it? Well then, it's more appropriate to do, like the pasuk says, ki kigvoya shamayim al ha'aretz, as much as heaven is higher than the earth, gavar chaste al yireya, Hashem's kindness is strong for those who fear him. Which means, in other words, that Hashem gives, with kindness, Hashem gives long life, arichos yomim. Therefore, according to that way of looking at it, the better thing is to write al ha'aretz directly beneath kimei shamayim to represent that idea. Or is the word, is it meant to represent the fact that it helps keep us away from aveiros? And then you have the pasuk to choik mizrach mimaidim, hirchik menuas pshainu, where the next pasuk from Tehillim says, as much as east is far away from west, so as Hashem distanced us from our aveiros, in that case, then kimei shemayim and al ha'aretz should be as far apart as possible. So the ma'aseh in all mezuzahs nowadays, it's universally accepted. We do it the second way, so that the minhag is, that the minhag of sofrim is that they write the mezuzah consists of 22 lines. The 22nd line ends with the word, the 22nd line, you write the words, al ha'aretz, at the beginning of the line, and the rest of the line until the end is blank and forms parasha psukha. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, talking about the parashias in a mezuzah, a day between Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya, and at the end, and we'll talk more dinim about the proper way to write a mezuzah, and then eventually how to put it up.